Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, and we archive the podcast at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. I'm starting to slow down for some reason. It's a very strange experience that I'm having here. I mean, good heavens, I'm only 57 years old, and it just seems like time is just flying by, and my dad is in his 80s, and he's running around doing stuff. But it's one of those things that we have to deal with. That is correct, folks. We're going to be talking about aging. I know what you're thinking. Why do we have to talk about this? Because my father, I wouldn't necessarily refer to him as a wise man, but he had a lot of great phrases that he used to repeat to me. And basically he said that no one gets out of this world alive, for starters, which is a subject we will be talking about in this program. But also be sure that you find a job that you love doing, because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like me. I have to say, my father, from his perspective, I suppose, he did get stuck for a while and then went to junior college and did all the things that he did. Well, aging is the issue on the table today, and talking about it from a courageous perspective is our guest on the program, talking about your best years ever reimagined. Dr. Ken Druck is my guest. Ken, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Richard, it's so good to be with you. I can't wait to dive into the pool on this one. And it is a subject that we all systemically want to walk the other direction from.
Yeah. What I'm hoping for is, and I know that many of our listeners are really hoping that you will show us the way, as Ponce de Leon tried to show us the fountain of youth. It's like, there has to be Hollywood. I think Hollywood found the solution, to aging, so we don't have to deal with this. Maybe that's the way to go.
Well, we do get a profound choice in this life, not only with aging, but with conflict, with many things. And we get to either turn away, to hide, deny, repress, avoid, outrun, or at least try to, or to face into life on its terms and to say, okay, like your dad said, I'm not going to get out of this alive. If I'm fortunate, I'm going to get older. And since I'm going to get older, how about I master what that's about? How about I come to terms with that? How about I face in, and instead of having all these myths, misconceptions, fears, dreads, and avoidance about the experience of getting older, how about if I start looking forward and I start treating myself with a kindness that allows me to make each season of life my best one ever?
My great-grandmother on my mother's side was celebrating her 95th birthday, and I had the fortune of bringing my cassette recorder at that time to interview her and relatives about her. For what reason, I honestly just thought this would be interesting to do, but also telling people that I was going to outlive her. She was 95 at the time, and as years went by, I would say the same thing and add to it, and she's making it really hard. She died at the age of 100, so I have another good 43-plus years that I have to go to outlive my great-grandmother, who I wasn't that close to, but for some reason there was something about it, and I don't know about you, by the way, do you prefer Dr. Druck or just Ken?
Ken is great, Richard. I can call you Dr. Richard, Dr. Dugan. I think it'd be better if we're Ken and Richard.
I think that's a good idea.
Old buddies.
Absolutely, because we're going down the same road. But there's a line from, and I can't help but always go back to one of my favorite musicians, a musical artist, who is quoted in a song basically saying, "And it turns me on to think of growing old." Now, as a kid of 12, 13, 14, 15 years of age, in addition to thinking all kinds of other things about health and wellness, and gee, I better start taking care of myself now because I don't want to end up like one of those old hunched over men walking the streets of Phoenix with a cane. Thank you, no. But I also thought, I wonder, that'll be kind of cool to, you know, be in my 40s, 50s, 60s. You know, I mean, I don't know why I thought it was cool. Maybe I thought maybe by then I might be smarter and wiser and successful and all of those things that, you know, we kind of long for as we're growing up, adolescence into young adulthood. But is that a common concept or perception that folks have in those ages, the early ages, teens and 20s, that the folks that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s and plus don't, not so much?
Well, you know, we have these ideas dancing in our heads about, depending on what we went through, how well our parents aged, whether we had grandparents and we got to see them ripen as human beings, or we got to see them disappear as human beings. And of course, we live in a culture where we worship youth and we kind of desecrate people as they get older. You know, at age 60 in some cultures, you're just waking up. You're just beginning life. You're just coming awake. You're in the highest season of life. You have all this experience. You've settled down some of your insecurities. You have a realistic picture of what life is, of what the priorities are, and you know how to harvest them. And in our culture, you know, you're on the back nine of life. You turn 60, you know, you're on the back nine. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're looking at the hourglass. So I think the opportunity of your listeners today and for both of us is to really take inventory. And that's where, you know, the Courageous Aging book starts, with taking inventory. I have a self-audit, and we get to really look at, how am I doing with this stuff? You know, what part of my house do I need to put in order? What myths and misconceptions do I possess that I'm dragging myself into my 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s? And how do I, you know, put my house in order psychologically, physically, spiritually, in terms of my relationships, and in terms of, you know, my whole legal, financial, and psychological estate plan?
You know, my father also said, when I asked him at his 70th birthday, which was a good 16 years ago, I said, you know, happy birthday, Dad. You know, you're 70. You know, how's it feel to be 70? He says, well, you know, I didn't expect to live this long, but I am glad I'm here. And now he's 86, and I'm sure he feels the same way. I've had the great pleasure of interviewing both of my parents on this program and talking to them about their lives and their growing up and their raising six kids and you know, all of the different aspects of that, as well as their individual lives, even as a couple, and the importance of music and friends. And that was one of the things that I always found very interesting. Now, quite honestly, I have to admit that I cannot recall ever seeing my father cry. At the same time, I don't know that he ever actually tried to hide it. But my dad has always been a rather private person, especially on a spiritual level. I want to touch upon that aspect, the spiritual aspect of all of this, of aging. From a biblical standpoint, it is appointed to every man once to die, and then the judgment. Although I think we need to figure out what happened with Lazarus, because according to the same book, he died twice. So I'm trying to figure that one out myself, but that's a subject for another day. But in terms of this issue of, because again, you and I, we both know we're not getting out of this world alive. And that subject, for some, not all, but for many, some even in their teens and 20s, but especially where we are and above, scares the daylights out of us, in spite of everything we've been through and survived, And that's something else, by the way, I do want to touch upon is the work that you do with folks who've gone through traumatic experiences. But can we talk about that particular aspect of aging? Because we know it's going to happen. It's kind of like if I get on the 101 going south towards Los Angeles, and that's where I want to go, and I get off at an exit in Los Angeles, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Well, we came into this world, we're taught, we age, we're told we're not going to get out of this world alive, and yet it still scares the heck out of us.
Yep. Well, the question, I think, the important question is, since we don't get out of this alive and we don't know completely, you know, none of us knows with 100% certainty what death is, but since we don't get out alive, how about the rest of the time we're going to be spending here? Do we want to be living and tying up all that energy in fear and dread and showing ourselves horrific pictures of ourselves in decline and not being able to do? Or do we want to somehow learn how to make peace, some measure of peace with the fact that life has this proposition? Life has these terms and conditions. We're on lease, basically. And that we need, why tie up fear and dread when I can be living in this moment, living in this season of life, making sure that I've got a plan for this season of life or the next season, my retirement, who knows what, a plan that is vibrant, that gets me excited, that has me enthusiastic, rather than tying up all my energy in dread. And there are ways to make peace, which is part of why I wrote this book, is how do you begin, and not that we all do it the same way, where none of us is a cookie cutter. How do I make peace with my life, with life's terms, and harvest the best that life has to offer for as many years as I'm going to get? And none of us also has, we don't get to play God. We don't get to know how many years we have. But how do I do what I need to do in this moment, in this season of life, to make it rich, to create love in my relationship so I'm only leaving a legacy of love, not a trail of unfinished business? How do I put my house in order so I'm not leaving a house full of clutter if something did happen to me? You know, it's like buying insurance. We don't buy life insurance to die. We buy it to live with the sense of peace that if something did happen, the people we love would be taken care of.
You know, you also, there's another aspect that I have to throw into the mix, because it used to be science fiction. And it's slowly but surely potentially going to become science fact. And that has to do with the possibility of our science is learning how to, or is beginning the process of learning how to transfer our consciousness to a robot, a computer, what have you. And to some, it's like, that would be great. Then I can live forever.
Yep.
Is that part of the denial of the destination that we're all headed for as mortal, physical mortal beings?
Well, how could we? First of all, imagination is an extraordinary part of us. Our imagination is part of the miracle of being human. We get to take these thinking experimental steps into the future through our imagination. And we can either imagine the worst happening, or we can imagine the best happening, or unrealistic things happening, or, you know, we can consider all the possibilities in science fiction and all these, and genomics and, you know, all cloning and artificial intelligence are all allowing us to consider every possibility for how we might continue, mm-hmm. how we might, you know, outlast death, how we, some part of us might continue. And the other thing is, you know, we also have, and you mentioned before, you know, that I've worked in a lot of tragedies. Yes, I was the go-to guy for a lot of people after 9/11, after Sandy Hook, and hopefully I'll be helping the families in Las Vegas that just went through a tragedy. But part of what people start realizing, people who've gone through tragedies, is because they've lost somebody they love suddenly and traumatically, is they begin, guess who they go see? Do they go see clergy? Do they go see their shrink? No, they go see a medium or a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they want to consider the possibility that this goes on, that there is a spiritual realm in which life does continue. We may not be able to access it. We may need somebody to help us do that, but it's the possibility that somebody we love or us at a later date will go on in some way, shape, or form, and that life does continue. And of course, how could we not want to wish that, imagine that, try to access that in every possible way?
And yet there are those who are so frustrated at the state of things, and not just in this country, but around the world, in addition to these horrific tragedies that seem to keep happening, who are starting to ask the question, and you make the statement, who wouldn't want that? And they're asking the question, does mankind deserve to continue? Because mankind can't even get its act together, will not. It refuses to learn from history, general history, let alone personal history, to not make the same mistakes, to not do the same things. You know, we talk a lot on this program about our own evolution. You know, I talk to people Yes. about it all the time, you know, and it seems like, and I'm going to use I'm going to use the governmental example because it's the best. What I've noticed in my short, scant little puff of smoke life of 57 years, when I view what's been going on in Washington since I've been observing it, say, maybe the late 60s, early 70s, which is damn early for a kid to be concerned about that at the age of 9 or 10. Nonetheless, I'm watching all of these things unfold. And what I've noticed is we haven't progressed at all. I think about some of the movements over the generations, and even though we have the written laws on the books, the hearts of men haven't changed. We still hate one another because of our race, because of our sex, because of our religion, because of our politics, because of our chosen gender or sexual preference or. And you can list whatever you want as far as our differences. In spite of the fact there are all these laws, man's heart hadn't changed one iota. So I wonder, are we really evolving? And as far as aging is concerned, it seems as though maybe some of us, you and I, might be exceptions to the rule. I don't know. I am trying my utmost to be as inclusive and accepting of people's differences. As a matter of fact, you know, I was born legally blind, and for many years as I was going through school, I began to develop this concept that my blindness, legal blindness, was a perceived limitation. That if I wanted to accomplish something, I could. I might have to do it a little differently than everybody else, but I could do it. And well, gee, look at me now. I'm living in a place where I've wanted to for decades by the ocean. Doing what I love doing, and that is conversing with folks such as yourself about subjects that are fascinating to me. I'm a curious individual. So can we maybe talk a little bit about this aspect of courageous aging, which is the title of Dr. Ken Druck's book, and this aspect of our human evolution or lack thereof?
Richard, I love the question you're asking. For me, it is the single most important question for us as individuals, and talk about aging courageously, facing into that question. Am I evolving? Am I ripening as a human being? And not only does that have implications for our families, our kids if we have kids, our wives and husbands if we have them, for the people we work with, the people that are closest to us, it has implications for the community we live in, the country we live in, and the world we live in. Because if we take personal responsibility for evolving, for becoming the higher, smarter, stronger, more courageous, more integrity-based version of who we've been, if we aspire to that, if we cultivate that becoming that person, then guess what gets better? The world gets to be a better place. Then the world evolves. And does everybody make that choice? No. So do we still have, you and I have been fighting for certain rights, human rights and justice, a level of justice, a level of compassion, empathy in the world, inclusiveness for 40 years and more. Mm. And we see, and it's heart-wrenching to look out across the world and our nation especially, and to see that there are pockets of people who haven't not just evolved, they've gone the other direction. They've been feeding the beast. They've been feeding the darkness. They've been living in despair, distrust, disconnection, fear, and they've armed themselves against the hope. I mean, we have a choice. Do we live in hope and feed that hope with action, or do we live in despair and kind of give up and jump into a cocoon and to create and to cut off all other perspectives about what this life is and what's possible and become very self-righteous in our own silos? And that is a profound choice that all of us get to make every day of life.
You know, I say this jokingly, but at the same time, I think there is some seriousness in my statement that if there were some kind of attack by a northern portion of a country across the Pacific Ocean, well, I won't name it. We know who it is. All I want is to be at ground zero. I do not want to be a survivor. Take me out, okay? I'm done. There's a certain level of frustration from that. I don't want to be in a bunker 12 feet or 30 feet or 120 feet underground, you know, with all of the supplies available to sustain me and the lives of who knows how many other people for a year, 10 years, 100 years. That is not living in any way. No. In my mind, it's not living.
So we get to, you and I get to sit here and think out loud about, you know, are we evolving? Back to your question.
Yeah.
Are we, in the way that we're approaching that little northern country and other parts of the world now,
yes,
as things ferment in Africa,
mm-hmm,
is the way that we're approaching that likely to escalate it, to create that bad result? Or is there another way of approaching it that might de-escalate, that might create the greater possibilities for peace? And we got to make those decisions not only as individuals in our families, where people hold grudges, where we've had long-standing resentments or jealousies, but we get to make that decision on a community level. We get to make it on a national level in terms of what we are voting for in our own nation, what we're advocating, what we're asking our representatives to stand for,
yeah,
how we're using our voices. And I think each one of us has a responsibility. As we age courageously, guess what happens? We get to a place in our life where we realize, we look kind of down the road and we see, you know what, I'm really not going to live forever. I'm in kind of the fourth quarter of life or the third quarter,
mm-hmm,
the game. And we get, and something happens, something shifts inside of us. We realize that we can pay the good in our lives. You know, we get to take inventory. Hey, you know what? I've had some real blessings. Like you said earlier, I live by the ocean. I get to do what I love. I've been given the gift. I've overcome the adversity of being born legally blind. I've gotten to live with my eyes wide open, my heart wide open. I've lived in a free nation. And we get to count the blessings and decide, do I want to plant a tree that another generation is going to be able to stand in the shade of? Do I want to leave this world a safer place and a better place so that if I have grandkids or kids or future generations that I want to have what I had? And we have a level of social responsibility. And I look at our baby boomer peers. I look at the 10,000 people that are turning 65 every year, every day.
Mm.
And I look at the 76 million people over 65 that are my peers. And I say, what kind of a legacy are we going to leave? And that's going to be built on the way we behave and we use our voices today.
I think that's a very important point to make. And, you know, and again, I think it's important that we do express our frustrations over whatever the situations are, because I think in many instances that can actually help us to get back to that center spot of optimism and so forth. I think one of the things that's helped me, and I unfortunately, and for the most part, I was devoid of any concern whatsoever in our last presidential cycle up until September of 2016. Somehow, a vortex was created and I was sucked in. And it took me 6 months to get unsucked. To the point where now I take the perspective, regardless of which side you're on or who you're supporting or not or this or that or the other, in the grand scheme of thing, and I use the metaphor of my scant 57 years as a puff of smoke. Well, the existence of humanity in the infinitesimal aspects of the universe and time is less than a puff of smoke. And that in 100, 1,000, 10,000 years, none of this is going to matter. It's irrelevant because the universe continues to move and spin and do it whatever it does. And we may or may not be here. The planet could be hit by an asteroid, for all we know, that could blow it apart. It's happened before in the universe, and it's happening now. It certainly could happen again. And we could be the target, and then none of this really matters.
But are we the stewards, Richard, to create every possible chance that we've protected, we've been the good stewards for this planet, and that we've protected it, mm-hmm. and not that we get to control it,
right,
1,550 years from now, but we've been good stewards, and we left only footprints.
Yeah,
you know, did we take care of it in hopes that it might evolve and it might be a place mm-hmm. where a few generations at the very least could live and enjoy the same benefits, be able to walk out and see the beauty and watch a sunset and raise a family and live in a free society. Have we created those possibilities, or have we lived a life where we became indifferent? We cowardly, and the reason I talk about courage and courageous aging, because there's something called cowardly aging. And it's anybody who becomes indifferent to the well-being of other people and to the future, rather than saying, look, here's my perspective. And we don't all have to agree.
Right.
But we do have to respect each other's good intent. You know, I will tell you that the last book I wrote, I ended up on a radio show in the south part of this country. And I did a little research on the host and found out he was a founding member of a group that I have serious disagreements with. And he was one of the founders of the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought, oh my God, why did they invite me on this show? I'm going to be California psychologist, liberal Democrat roadkill, you know? I'm going to be filleted on this show.
Yeah.
Instead, I got on the show, and this gentleman and I started talking about our fathers. He had heard the story and read in my book about the death of my oldest daughter. And he said, I don't know how I could. I've got two boys, and I don't know if I could ever survive that. And we started talking about what we had wanted, what we want for our kids as dads. And it became a dad conversation. Well, let me tell you, we found common ground. Even though we both believed that there were different paths to that better future, we found common ground, we found respect, we had a great, vibrant conversation, we both learned something from each other, it tempered my approach, it tempered his, and we became friends. And that's what we need, is to be building bridges, even with those people we disagree, and finding that common ground, because most of us want to have a better, safer world for our kids. And the answers are somewhere between my perspective and their perspective. And we've got to find those answers, those better solutions, but working together, not pulling each other apart, demonizing, polarizing, into different camps, which unfortunately, that's all that some of our leaders know how to do.
Well, I have to say that not in every case, but in many, many cases, it always seems that natural disasters or tragedies always seem to pull people of differing perspectives and viewpoints together, only because those differing viewpoints and perspectives are totally irrelevant at that moment when we saw what happened, for example, most recently with Hurricane Harvey and then Irma and Jose and on. We've had fires here in California, up and down the coast. We've had a few little earthquakes around the world as well, down in Mexico and in different places. And it's like, and I've often said this, that those kinds of events are the great equalizers of humanity. It doesn't matter anymore how much money you have, or whether you're on the right or the left, or whether you live here or there, or the type of work you do. We're now all in the same boat. And I think
exactly. And not only that, but you had mentioned before about, you know, had the hearts of men changed. Well, the good part of our nature, the part of our hearts that are still very much capable of love, of compassion, of empathy, are awakened. When these things happen, we're awakened out of that indifference. Or that comatose sleep where we're polarized, we're awakened out of that. Our hearts wake up and we see our fellow human beings suffering, hurting, having suffered losses, and we reach out and we don't care. Like you're saying, it becomes irrelevant. Mm-hmm. What becomes relevant is this is another person of my time, of my community, of my nation, of my world that needs my help. And my heart, in my life, I have room for that kind of giving, that kind of generosity of heart.
Yeah. You know, I saw something. I was blown away by this just from the sheer stupidity of it. I actually saw a report following one of the hurricanes, and I can't remember if it was in Texas or Florida or Puerto Rico or one of the other areas where these hurricanes hit. And I was also saddened by the fact that there was another hurricane, although they referred to it differently, that actually hit Ireland just about a week to 10 days ago. And I'm going, wait a minute, I don't remember anything about those things. It's a place that my wife and I have been twice and would love to move there, although now I'm starting to question that. But the story that I saw, I was just flabbergasted by the story because it said amongst all of the flooding and the destruction and this and that and the other, that there was looting going on. And I'm going, what are you people thinking? You have no power. You have no water. You have no food, and yet you're stealing things. I mean, they were stealing from like a stereo shop or a jewelry store or something. And I was like, wow. And so there are going to be those few who aren't evolving quite so much. Or maybe they've gotten a mindset that says that when stuff like this happens, this is what you do. I don't know, you know, why people would choose to do that kind of thing in the midst of such devastation. But, you know, hey, people will do crazy things depending upon what's going on. And sometimes, you know, I don't know, maybe they're in shock and they just don't know what else to do. But nonetheless, it's one of those things where, you know, we're all here together. I've often said this, Ken, that there is a lifeboat that we have. And the lifeboat will hold over 7 billion, close to 8 billion people. And as far as this program's concerned, because we are looking for the new paradigms for a new world and those new ways of living, you may come aboard this lifeboat, but there's only one condition. You've got to let go of the old ways of doing things because we're not taking those with us. We have to find new ways to move forward. And so, and to me, those instances that you talk about and that you deal with when you go into these tragic situations and are working to counsel with different folks, which I want to talk about in the second half of our program, it is that part of our humanity that you deal with, that you express through your work, that is part, I think, part of our evolutionary process. And I do believe that more and more people are beginning to see that. Again, not wanting to, in any way, shape, or form, hope that we have more disasters and tragedies, to bring people together. I mean, that's not the way we do things, or that we shouldn't have to do that way. But at least there is the example. There is the showing us. As a matter of fact, that's kind of the way it is, I think, is that these folks who go through this, and we start hearing these different stories. I mean, I think about some of the stories I've heard come out of Las Vegas. Some people who unfortunately lost their lives, but in the process, they were trying to protect other people. They were actually, I heard of one who actually covered one of these other folks with their bodies, but unfortunately they lost their own lives, and yet this person survived. That, to me, is part of the evolutionary process and not the converse of going nuts and rioting and looting and so forth. So I applaud the work that you're doing, which I would like to talk about in the next segment of our program. We're talking with Dr. Ken Druck. He is the author of his latest work, Courageous Aging, and it can be courageous. Your best years ever reimagined. We hope that you will pick up a copy. Age is as persuasive as gender, race, ethnicity when it comes to how we treat ourselves and are treated by others. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for staying with us. We're talking with Dr. Ken Druck, and he's the author of Courageous Aging. It's something that we talk about a lot of subjects around it, but the fact of the matter is obviously when we come into this world, actually even before we come into this world, from the moment that the two cells unite in mama's womb, we are aging. And that is just the nature of things. And how we do that is a big deal. I have to say, Ken, that one of the things that I came to a realization of very early on in my life, and I can't explain it. All I know is that I know it, that my life has meaning. Because if I didn't have that knowing inside of me, it wouldn't make any difference whether I raped and pillaged and plundered the village, you know, after village. It wouldn't matter. But there's something inside of me that says, hey, you know, I got a higher purpose. I've got something better to do than that. And so that hopefully is what I'm doing. I hope I chose right. And you seem to have chosen as well. I'm curious as to how you came to this choice, as far as especially with working with folks who are going through their own troubles. I mean, you've had your own tragedies and disasters and all of those kinds of things. In addition to aging. So what propelled you into this direction, and how early on was it?
You know, Richard, you and I are very similar in the sense of that for some reason we were wired seeking meaning, seeking for things to make some degree of sense. And so you can probably remember back to the time, as I can, when we were little kids. And you could walk into a room and feel somebody's pain or their happiness, their joy. And, we have this extraordinary radar, this part of our equipment that we get wired into us called our emotional system. And this emotional system not only picks up signals from inside of our own hearts, but it picks up signals from other people. We get to see them and see their sorrow, or we get to see their joy, or everything in between. And so for me, that sensitivity has always been with me. And I've always been the kid who walked into the room and had a sense of what was going on with other people, or at least had the open-ended question that would create the safety for somebody to say what was going on. And that became my source of learning. Learning about life, learning about my own emotions, learning how to navigate my way through this world. And I continued to do that through my teen years and into my 20s. And I actually, I heard, oh my God, if you're going to do this for a profession, you better go out and get a degree. And I went out, and somehow as a kid with severe learning disabilities, I I even in spite of them, I learned to compensate, and I got my doctorate in clinical psychology. So I became a young psychologist, and I would say that I've cultivated an element of compassion and understanding, not just for people who are going through hardship or adversity, but for people who are proactive, and they say to themselves, you know what, I don't need a tragedy to wake up. I want to wake up on my own. I want to open my eyes wider. I want to listen more carefully. I want to tune in. I want to get a step ahead. I want that competitive edge by seeing into the future, by using my imagination, my entrepreneurship. And so I've been working my whole life with both people who are proactive and want to get ahead of the pain curve and to get on the opportunity side of things and create good meaning and good things in the world, make the world a better place. And I've also had the honor and privilege of working with people in their darkest hour of tragedy and loss, and have developed the ability, largely based on my own life experience and having gone through that kind, the worst, what many people consider to be the worst kind of loss, the loss of a child, when my oldest daughter Jenna died at age 21.
Mm. I have difficulty at times relating to stories like that. I only have had one very, very close friend pass. He was actually a friend of my wife's and mine. He lived across the street from us. And when he lost the lease on his house, we asked him to come live with us until he got himself a place. And so he did, and ended up passing away in our home only a few months later. And that was hard, because he was like, he was like a big brother. Now, I have a younger brother, mind you, but I did not have a big brother. I'm the big brother. But yes, he was kind of like that for me. And it was heartbreaking, because I was really looking forward to learning more about things that I didn't learn about when I was a kid. I'm sure you grew up probably learning about cars, and you got your license at 16 and all of those different kinds of things. Not for me. I was still riding bicycles. Even with my legal blindness, I was bicycling all over the place and content with the knowledge that at age 65, I'll still be bicycling. And yet here was this gentleman who came into our lives and so forth. And I still have all of my siblings. As I said, both my parents are still alive. And so when I hear stories from friends whose parents have passed or siblings have passed, you know, I'm certainly compassionate. But it's like I don't have that kind of awareness, if you will, or connection to that kind of an event as of yet. And I would love to say, and I hope I never do, which would be a foolish thing to say, because again, the whole program we're talking about is the fact that we're all aging, and that's where we're headed. But hopefully,
isn't it a blessing? How many of us have blessed lives where, though tragedy has eluded us, the worst kind of losses have eluded us, or setbacks, whether they're living losses, and a living loss is a divorce, it's an estranged family member, mm-hmm. it's a bad diagnosis, it's a son or daughter who's deployed and living in a high-risk zone of the world. And a life loss, of course, is when somebody we love dies. And what a blessed thing to have that innocence and to be there. But the question is, we all get, you know, the reality is we all get a turn in the soup. We yeah. all get to stand in a moment of unspeakable, choiceless sorrow. That's part of the package deal of this life, is that we will suffer. If we've loved, we will suffer losses, mm-hmm. and we'll be challenged, even though in our society, we tell people and we teach our kids, there's a pill for every pain, there's a diversion for every moment of emptiness, there's a fix for every problem. The truth is, no. We all get to stand in a moment of unknowingness, where we don't know what's going on, of emptiness, where we kind of feel void, and of sorrow, where there's no spin and no psychological or spiritual or religious spin that's going to get us to snap out of it. And we have to summon the courage and the patience and the self-care to know how to take care of ourselves and each other during those hard times. And that's a lost art in our society, the art of listening and of walking with somebody and standing with them in a moment of sorrow. We want to put a big spin on it and fix it and chase it away quickly. And yet the most honorable thing we can do is to stand in and to walk with and to stand by somebody we love, or to stand by ourselves as we go through a tough season or a dry spell in life.
You know, there are all kinds of challenges that befall each one of us as we go through our lives. And there's a condition that especially folks in the military suffer from, PTSD. And yet it has also been said that we as civilians in our own lives, daily lives, we can suffer that, whether we've been through a hurricane, whether we've been through a mass shooting, whether we've been through whatever the those types of things are. Or for that matter, there are even those who are saying there are folks who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder after the 2016 election. It was that emotional. It was that devastating for some that some folks haven't even recovered. It's still something that it seems as though our lives, as we have moved forward in time, have gotten so much more. I don't know if I want to use the word complicated, but there's so much more going on, and maybe it's because we're so connected, like via the internet and social media, that we get bombarded by all of this stuff.
Exactly.
And
we are living in a very fertile moment of history in this country. We are in the middle of a laboratory. We are the experiment in democracy in a period of such volatility, where all of our values are being thrown out on the table. We're getting to make choices. We're seeing the worst possible outcomes. We're seeing what's at risk. We're getting to see each other. The kind of the mask has been stripped from certain forms of racism, of misogyny. I mean, turn on your news. Mm-hmm. You're going to see all these things on display, a parade where we're almost transfixed watching the news to see what chapter of this reality TV show or something that appears like it has unfolded in that day. And it is traumatizing. A friend of mine who's a psychiatrist told me that he's now performing Trumpectomies.
Well, like I said, that's the reason why I take a look at the grand scheme of things and say, none of this is going to matter in a thousand years.
But what he said was important.
That's funny, though.
It might not matter.
Yeah.
But what he said was important, and I want to repeat it for anybody in your audience who might be affected. And this is not Republican or Democrat or anything. It's just, here's the condition we're all living in.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was that, he said, you know, we have a very volatile leader who happens to be capturing all the news. He is the news and has been for a year now. And it is almost comparable. He said, you know, his specialty is treating narcissistic personality disorders. And he said, what I get to deal with is the wives and children of these characters who are compelling, charismatic, brilliant, successful, often wealthy, who have for decades walked around on eggshells in fear, intimidated by, terrorized by, and walking around on eggshells, and then something changes and they realize that they have been living in a traumatized state all this time. They've been bombarded on a daily basis with unwelcome, unscheduled changes, radical positions, behavior changes, mood swings, and so on. And he said, that's what I feel like our country is going through right now as people watch what's happening on both sides.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought it was an interesting observation.
Very much so. Because as you say, it doesn't matter which side you're on. One of the thoughts that, of course, was expressed, just to take this only just a little bit further, following November 9th was on November 9th was the comment that was made that, okay, now that's over. All right, everybody, let's go ahead and take a breath. But we weren't allowed to. We haven't, and after every other election that I can remember, no matter whether I was in favor of or against the guy that won, at least I got to take a breath and, okay, I got a couple of months here. I can kind of recenter, refocus. January 20th, you know, we'll get this guy in and away we go. But at least we get a couple of months to relax.
No, there's no coming up for air. And I work with several news organizations. I'm on a guest on CNN often, and I gave CNN a protocol, and I said, you really owe it to your listeners and the people who turn on CNN to give them this protocol for when they need to unplug and turn off the news, mm-hmm. when you need to go for a walk in nature, when you need to turn on some soft music. Maybe the music of your childhood, maybe soothing music, when you need to meditate and go take a yoga class or sit in an art class and draw something. But we need, because of the technology that's available to us, we need to know that it's important to unplug, and because we will be overstimulated and burned out where we don't, as you're pointing out, come up for air. We don't take a reprieve, and that begins to look, the whole world begins to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
And when the reality is that there are wonderful things happening in nature. There are wonderful things happening in our communities where people are helping each other, working together. There are so many other realms of life other than the Trump watch,
mm-hmm.
which so many people have become transfixed, tuning into every day. We need to unplug.
The secondary subject along those lines is the stream of hurricanes that was bashing up against the eastern part of the United States, starting with Harvey. And I was watching some of this news of both of Harvey and of Irma and so on. Maybe it because of the fact that the other one has been going on for almost 3 years now. I'm telling my wife, said, look, we got to watch something else. I can't take any more of this hurricane watch. I mean, it was on every network pretty much. And everybody was talking about it and showing the path of the projections and this and that and the other and the water levels. And they were even showing live coverage of people doing stupid stuff in their cars going into deep water and this and that and the other. And now we got to rescue them. And I just was, I'm going to use the phrase, I was waterlogged. I couldn't take any more. And this is part of the problem we have in this day and age with subject matter. I mean, and again, I don't want to take anything away from the folks who have suffered such great loss as well as injury in any of these situations, especially, for example, Las Vegas. But even for those of us who are watching from the outside who want to be compassionate and understanding, it's like 24/7 and it's like, stop. I can't take anymore. You know, I care. Yep. My heart is broken, but I can't take anymore.
Well, it's called compassion fatigue. And it's something that when I give programs, called Self-Care for the Caregiver. And it's a workshop that I've been giving to the staff of hospitals, of domestic violence programs, for psychological and psychiatric associations where people are in these situations on the front lines and in the trenches working in these situations, as I have for many years. And compassion fatigue is very real. And it's not only real for first responders, it's real for people who are watching too much news. Where we don't know, it's almost like there's a hypnotic element where we're transfixed and we need to know that it's time for me to get up and take a break. Just like we're all learning how to get up and take a break from our computers and carpal tunnel, to prevent it. We need to learn how to get up and take a break and to realize, to regain our grounding and our perspective and to realize I am I'm compassion fatigued. I'm exhausted. I'm not going to be effective in helping these people. All I'm doing is burning myself out by doing this. And I think those are the kind of lessons that also, because, you know, I'm watching my daughter and her husband go through this with the thing that's happening in our country, the disasters that we're seeing, hurricanes and the terrorism that we're seeing around the world. Now, I've lived long enough to know, have seen many of these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our kids and the younger millennials are seeing it for the first time, and they don't know what hit them.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to set a code of self-care to also say, you know, here's what I find helpful. I find it helpful once in a while to turn off the TV and go maybe go roll up our sleeves and help out at a local shelter. But to do things that instead of just being an observer of these things, to do something good,
yeah,
and to get out and roll up my sleeves and be active in some way that benefits the people who are suffering.
Another line from, again, one of my favorite artists. He's got a song out, and the line, I paraphrase it basically, is that, you know, all they know is the news that they see. What will they do when it's their turn to choose? Now, I had an interview with a gentleman not long ago dealing with, he holds interfaith gatherings in the Middle East and other parts of the world as well, where especially where there's conflict, and bringing people together of different faiths to talk, to converse, to discuss. He says one of the most fascinating things he's found, especially in the Middle East, especially between Israelis and Palestinians, the youth, mind you, the youth, is that they're basically saying to their parents, to those folks who are older than them, who have been fighting this fight for however long their families have been fighting it, for however many generations, hundreds if not thousands of years, they're telling their families, their friends, their elders, we don't want any part of what you're doing. It's not our fight. Just because we have the same DNA does not mean that it's our fight. If you want to fight that, you go right ahead.
The old way. You said it before. Let go of the old way.
Exactly. And they're doing it.
Yep.
And they're doing it.
I've had the honor of working with Israeli and Palestinian parents who have lost children in the hatred, in the war, and who are gathering and saying, the way we honor those we've lost is to make sure that one more family, Israeli or Palestinian, does not have to suffer the way our family is going to suffer for the rest of our lives, having suffered this loss. And that's the code of honor. So when we talk about let go of the old way, whether it's letting go of the old way we've looked at aging, whether it's letting go of the way that we see ourselves in the mirror, and instead of beating ourselves up because we have a wrinkle or a gray hair, embracing ourselves, the older version of ourselves in the mirror, you know, or whether it's reframing the old way that doesn't work, that only escalates and creates more risk and danger for ourselves, our kids, and future generations. It's time to let go of the old way and begin to embrace something that's going to be immeasurably more effective, safer, smarter, and contribute to the world and the possibility that other generations will have the privilege and the freedom to enjoy what we've been able to enjoy in our lifetime. Not that we haven't had hardships.
Right.
Not that we haven't had setbacks. But don't they deserve that kind of a world?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, because in 2008, when this whole financial thing happened specifically in the U.S., but I know that it affected the globe, I remember hearing from government officials who they made two very fascinating statements. And this applies in a general sense to what we've been talking about. But they were speaking, of course, of the financial crisis. And they said, we have never been down this road before. All right. That was the first statement. I thought, okay, all right, I can understand that. And then they started making decisions on how to fix it using the old ways. And I thought, well, wait a minute, hold it. How can you use the old solutions for a problem we've never seen before? And yet they did it. And now we're actually I'm hearing reports that in certain areas, certain industries, they're starting to begin the process of experiencing the same economic challenges that we could repeat from 2008, 2009. And it seems as though we tend to do that because we don't know any of the other old ways. And of course, as I say on this program, Ken, we want to provide people with choices and knowledge of those choices. And I use the analogy of a fogged-in road. And you've grown up with this fogged-in road all your life. There is a white line painted on the shoulder, and this is how you're educated as you're growing up, that you are to follow that white line from point A to point B, and you will get there, whether it be school or the grocery store, etc., and follow it back. And then so that's what you do all your life. And then all of a sudden, one day, you're following that shoulder, and the fog lifts, and you see a fork in the road that was never there before to your awareness. And now you have to decide whether or not you're going to go off on the fork. And that's, to me, what is starting to happen around the world, as your examples and the one of this gentleman that I've interviewed regarding the youth in the Middle East, is that they see the fork in the road and they want to check it out, you know, regardless of what their peers or their family or their friends or the government or their religion tells them, because it's not what they want.
Exactly. And this is the opportunity of this moment. And I invite everyone who's listening to think about very, very simple proposition, because it all starts with us. It starts with our personal, the way we see ourselves, what we allow ourselves to consider as the greater possibilities, or whether we're despairing and we don't see any possibility for anything, in which case we need some support and we need to rethink things. But I invite every one of your listeners to think about how you're looking at your age, how you're looking at this time of your life, and are there ways that you need to change and could change and that would make life better? Because this is about the quality of life. And if we're enjoying a better personal quality of life, guess what? We want to share it. We want others to as well. We have something left over because we've taken care of business. We put our own house in order, and we have the energy now to help others put their houses in order or to put their lives back together if they've suffered a calamity. We have that energy, that empathy, that compassion, and we have that sense of social responsibility.
When you meet with people who are dealing with, whether it's the trauma of tragedy or natural disaster, what have you, or you're dealing with people who are dealing with the trauma, if you will, of aging, where do you start? I mean, that's, to me, a daunting task because there's so much to deal with, obviously, because we've just scratched the surface of the wide and varied aspects of just living our lives in this world today.
Well, the starting place, I think, for everything good is a deep breath. Take a deep breath, and then it's time to start reflecting. It's time to start taking inventory. And that's why in the beginning of the Courageous Aging book, I have a self-audit. It's a very short self-audit. Take a few minutes, but it will give you a clear sense of exactly where you stand on the issues of aging. And I encourage people to put big circles around the ones that I call them the hot spots. You know, here's a boy, look at this. I didn't realize this is something I'm really, you know, I've been giving myself a hard time because of something that happened at work or something that I've started seeing, something that's changing in me in the mirror, or the fact that I'm thinking about retirement, or the fact that somebody's moved into my job at my company, or that my son just married a beautiful young woman and it's triggering jealousy in me because she's this beautiful young thing And, you know, I used to be the head turner in the family. Who knows what it is that's triggered, but it will give you a chance to take inventory. Mm. And then I think the second step is to clear the path forward. We want to make sure we're living forward, not living in the past, dragging regrets and anger and remorse and I could have, I should have, I would have. And instead, you know, clearing the path. And then third step, of course, is reimagining our best possible future. And my book is structured in a way, you know, I do workshops, courageous aging workshops, and I'm able to give them all over the country, but I'm not able to help everybody. But these are the exercises. There are exercises in every chapter that are taken directly from the workshops that are things that have helped people really reimagine their best possible future and enjoy some of their best years ever.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm always quoting my dad and other folks who came before me, and hopefully I've made enough of an impact in my life that people will maybe quote me. We'll see. But I do like the introduction here. To those on whose shoulders I stand and to those who will take courage and inspiration from these words, the words from Courageous Aging, Your Best Years Ever, Reimagined. Dr. Ken Druck has been my guest, and I want to, first of all, thank you so much for the time that you've given us on this program, the conversation that we have shared, and hopefully we have given people some, maybe we've given them some insight and inspiration and awareness that, you know, aging is a good thing, and that, yeah, maybe we can look at it from the standpoint that it turns you on to think of growing older and not getting old. It's a couple of semantical differences, but nonetheless, I think very important, and I thank you for sharing that today.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks so much for having me, and I do believe that it's within everyone's possibility to form a better attitude and a better picture about the fact that you're going to turn a year older. That, you know, with good fortune, you're going to get old and ripe, and that you will have given something beautiful back to this world in the way you showed up.
Absolutely. Also, should you find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because there's so much more that we can talk about.
I will make that. Let's make that a date. We'll sit together. We'll have a great conversation. Thank you, Richard.
Terrific. Before I let you go, I do want to let our listeners know that they can get in touch with you through your website, which is kendruck.com. That's KENDRUCK.com. And pick up a copy of his latest work, Courageous Aging. And we encourage you to do that. But I have three final questions for you before we let you go. And again, thanks so much for giving us so much time. First question is, who is Ken Druck?
Ken Druck is somebody who wants to leave a legacy of love, not only to those people in my inner circle, but I want to leave a legacy of love to as many hearts and many lives and families as I can touch.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
The greater possibilities for connecting to those people that we love and of leaving something good out of the sense of gratitude we have for this life and this opportunity we've been given.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to give love, show compassion, and turn compassion into the kind of action that makes a difference in people's lives.
And I'm hoping that people will only have to connect with you through your website to gain more insight and inspiration to help them get through their daily lives and not through tragedies and disasters of that nature. But thank goodness there are folks like you and others that are out there to help us through if we do need it. And again, we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for the wonderful forum you provide for all of us to become the better version of ourselves.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.